We are holding on Memtestamon Bay is about a third of the way down the Yarmouth Court, third of the way down the Yarmouth, the line against the Gabayu. The mission had talked about a couple of cases involving where a Dera's wife is struck and miscarries in the Medina of the Dmei Vlodis, the value of the babies and the various other depreciations and then damages to her body, what goes to her husband, and they force the Ger, and he's dead, and he has no Yoshim, then whether any of it goes to her, whether it's posted, whether the Mazik ends up keeping it. So now the Gemara is going to talk about some related topics, based, again, on this basic idea, which is that a Ger, Gershon is a guy of Katan Shanerla, dummy, therefore he doesn't have any children, then he doesn't have any Yoshim. Because his biological family is not considered his family, blah, blah, blah. So, Bominir of Yevasavim and of Nachman. Hamachzik v'shtarois of Shoger Mahu. What if somebody is holding on to shtarois of a ger? Now, what kind of shtarois are we talking about? We're talking about shtarois that involve land, as I was going to say. Rashi learns that we're talking about shtarois where this ger had previously lent another Jew money. He has a shibud on that person's karka, and he has a shtar to that effect. There's various other rishonim talk about other possibilities. We may be talking about a shtar. We may be talking about a shtar kinyan, a deed on property on land. We may be talking about a shtar raya, not so much a deed, but proof that he owed some kind of proof that this property was previously sold or given to him or whatever. Anyway, mahu, what would be the din? Rashi learns the question is he koina the shtar itself? Is he koina the paper of the shtar? Again, there's different other explanations that it boils down to. Can he be koina the land that comes with this shtar? Again, according to Rashi, that we're talking about a shibud, and you're not really talking about acquiring the land. The ger only had a shibud on it anyway. He doesn't actually acquire the land. But according to the other explanations that we're talking about a shtar kinyan or whatever, we may be talking about acquiring the actual land.
No, the full version.
Yeah. Well, again, the ger is dead. It's not a question of... No, according to Rashi that we're talking about a shibud, then there's no question for closing on it. I mean, the shibud was due to a loan. The ger is dead. The loan itself no longer exists. Because he has no descendants or anything, yet. So the Yisrael who he lent the money to remains in chazaka of it, and therefore he's not going to end up giving up his karka. So that's why, according to Rashi, the question is only: is he able to hold on to the paper? This person who had a chazaka on the paper, is he able to hold on to the paper? And again, according to the other explanations that we're talking about a shtar kinyan on karka, then we can be talking about: is he actually able to be koina the karka? So. Do we say mandamaksik ashtara adaita de arahu demaksik? When somebody is holding on to a shtar, he has in mind the karka that shtar represents. Therefore, va'arahalayatsik. Therefore, now in this case, he has not made any kind of chazaka on the land. Ushtara nami lekona. And therefore, he hasn't been koina the shtar either de lav daite ashtara, because after all, he didn't have in mind the actual paper of the shtar. The actual paper was worth only a few cents. The pashtas he had in mind the land. But the land he didn't make a chazaka on. So there's no way that he can be koina of the land.
Stronger than a
That's the point. In other words, if he only had in mind the land, if he only had in mind the land that the shtar represents, then he doesn't even have the shtar at that point. That's why Rashi is stressing that the point is the question is whether he's koina of the paper. If he only had in mind the land, then he never even made a kinyan on the paper itself. The only thing he could have been making a kinyan on is the land, and practically speaking, he didn't, especially because, yeah, if there's only a shibud, then there's no land to be koina in the first place. Okay, but that's what it means. In other words, had he been machzik in the land, had it been the kind of land where he could be machzik in, then he'd be koina the shtar along with it. That's the point. It's an inelegant way of putting it, maybe, but it amounts to, in other words, that in this case, if there's definitely no chazaka on the land, which there's not, because it's not even shayach a chazaka on the land in this case, the land never even belonged to the ger in the first place, then maybe you're not koina the shtar either. But he doesn't have in mind the lav daite ashtara. Oy dilma daite nami ashtara. Maybe not. Maybe he does have in mind the shtar.
What's the importance of being kind of shtar? I mean,
because, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, it's useful. It's a piece of paper. It has uses.
Paper is something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because present the karka.
But again, according to Rashi, that there's no possibility of him gaining the karka anyway. At least is he gaining the shtar? At least is he gaining that? Again, according to the other Rishonim, the Meforshim on the Rambam have a field day of what exactly the Rambam's shita is on this. Then the question may be more. Granted, maybe he's not able to be coined to the land, but at least he's coined to the paper, or maybe neither one. Okay.
Obviously, he cannot, if he's not able to coin to the land because it's a ger.
No. He's not. This yid was mastic in the shtar. But that's the point. Maybe at least
he's a yid who took
possession of the shtar.
Right.
That's the question. So therefore, in other words, if you say he's not coin to the shtar, it means that if another Yisrael comes and takes that shtar from him, then he's coin it. Or maybe not. Maybe at least he does have in mind to be coined at the shtar itself for the value of the paper. Okay. Amalei, so he said to him, Ani Mori, answer me, Rebbe. So what, does he need the piece of paper just to wrap around the neck of a bottle? Why would we think that he only has in mind the shtar rather than the land? Amalei, he says, yes, lotzer v'lotzer. As a matter of fact, yes, you could very well have that he does have in mind that he wants to be coined of the paper to be able to use as a bottle stopper. Now, the way we have the Gemara in front of us, it seems that the Gemara has kind of left the question unanswered because the Gemara stops there and then continues with another case. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to take it as that the Gemara has answered the question that, yes, all he had in mind, we have to assume that all he had in mind was to be coin of the paper, given that he knows he can't be coin of the character itself via the paper. He would have to actually make a chazaka on the character. And again, the Rambam's learning that this is a shtar mecher or shtar raya or whatever. So fine, the character of the ger would have been available for the taking, but he didn't manage to get it. So necessarily, he knows somebody else is going to end up with that character. At least, though, he has in mind that he wants the paper. And the answer would be yes, he has the paper, but not the character.
He has the paper. Can he erase the shtar and keep the paper? I mean, just the paper?
Yeah, it's his paper to do whatever he wants with. I mean, practically speaking, the person who owns the character is now going to have to arrange to get some kind of proof that he owns that character. He may well go and offer this guy a few dollars to buy the paper off him so that he rather than having the bother of having a new shtar written or whatever. But yeah. But to the extent that paper has a certain independent monetary value, then yeah. Okay. Another case, Amar Rabba. There is a whole other explanation that one of the Acharonim gives that we're not necessarily even talking about a case where the ger died. We could be talking about the ger is still alive, and the question is what ownership you have of the paper. Okay. Another case, Amar Rabba, Mashkon Yisrael Yisrael B'yad Ger. Suppose you have a yid is holding on to a mashkon, or the other way around, a ger is holding on to a mashkon from a yid. So the ger had lent the yid money and took a mashkon from him. Tosfos points out that this would apply regardless whether it was a mashkon that was taken b'shat halva as security for the loan, or whether it was taken shaloi b'shat halva then afterwards to make sure he doesn't default on the loan. Either way, umesa ger, then afterwards the ger died, or Yisrael acha behesik boy, if another yid now comes in as machzik in that mashkin, which again was left over in the ger's house, so now another yid has come and taken it from Hefker, we take that mashkin away from him and give it to the Yisrael who it originally belonged. My time, why? Given to miss the ger, pokale shibud, because once the ger died, the shibud is gone. Therefore, the other yid, therefore, we consider it doesn't belong, it's not something that to begin with belonged to the ger. It's something that belonged to the Yisrael. It was just in the possession of the ger. Well, the loan itself is gone, but the loan itself is gone, but the shibud, therefore, is gone as well, right. And therefore the mashkin reverts to its original owner.
Isn't that obvious?
Well, maybe not. You would think maybe the fact is somebody else came and grabbed it. Maybe he has chazak on it, but no, we don't say that. However, the other way around, mashkonish or ger b'yad Yisrael, what if the other way around, a ger's mashkin was in the hands of Yisrael, so the other way around, Yisrael lent the ger money and the ger died, umesa ger, uvo Yisrael acha behesik, right? Now another Yisrael wants to come and take that mashkin, after all, it belonged to the ger, I should be a tefker, I should be able to take it. What we say is, zeh konak negen ma'oisav, the one who had the mashkin in his possession acquires an amount of the mashkin equal to the chayv, So you can have it. In other words, the maskin can be worth more than that'd be a little disproportionate. But yeah, you could have that you lent him 100 and he gave you a maskin worth 200, let's say. So yeah. So you're gonna get now 100 out of that kineged marisav. V'zekonash es hashar, and the other person will be koina the rest of it. The rest of it is up for grabs. Question is amai. Why should the rest of it be up for grabs? Kikne lechatzere. Why shouldn't the first yid, the one who lent the ger money and had the mashkin in his possession, why should we say that it's chotzer, it's koina that mashkin for him? A person's chotzer can be koina for him even without his das. So it's been in his chotzer, it's been in his house all this time. Why shouldn't he be able to be koina?
That's always about
the mashkin. The mashkin.
The extra.
Yeah, the whole thing. The entire mashkin was in his possession.
There's no question about the...
There's no question about the 100 that went towards the chot. We're talking about the rest.
Right. Yeah.
Why shouldn't the rest of it should be koina shalom yidatoi? Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's a Tosfos in Brach Metzia that discusses a point that you have to at least know the object is in your chotzer, otherwise not koina for it. Fine. But in this case, you know it's in your chotzer. Tosfos also discusses over here that as the Gemara is going to continue over here that there's a difference also whether it's chotzer meshtameret or not, whether it's a chotzer that has a fence around it, for example. If it doesn't have a fence, you actually have to be standing right there in order for your chotzer to be koining you anything. We talked about this in Gittin, I think, as opposed to if it doesn't have a fence. If it does have a fence, then it's koining for you even if you're not right there. The answer is Amri. The answer is Hocha. My skin is a lesson. Yes, but what you're talking about over here is that the yid, the malva, is not in town at the time that the ger dies and this other person wants to take possession of the mashkin. So therefore, because the rule is like this, kol echad the isalidi day, when he's around, di iboy makni mati koni, that if he wanted at that point to be koneh, takinin chotzer, he would be able to kanyile nami chotzer. Then his chotzer is able to be koneh for him instead. So therefore, if he had been in town when this ger died, then sure, he could say, I want my chotzer to be koneh for me, and that would work. But if he himself is not in town, if he had wanted at that point to make some other kind of kinyan on this, then he couldn't because he's not there. He can't do a kinyan hagba on it or whatever. That's the point. If he's in town, then at least he's able to come over and do some other kind of kinyan on it. So then instead he can substitute kinyan chotzer for that. But if he's not there, therefore chotzer nami lekanya. Neither is his chotzer kinyan. The hilchasa and this halacha that we're saying that the other person is koyin to the rest is in fact the lase b'chatzerei when this person, when the original malve is not, or rather, not the person, when the object is not in the chatzer of the malve at the time. In other words, up until when we said the lase, we were using it before in the last couple lines. We meant the malve is not in town.
Right.
Now we're mentioning now we're going in a little bit of a different way. That. If the mashkin itself is not in his chotzer at the time of the ger's death, loy kona that he's not koina, because then you can't. If it was in his chotzer, the implication is regardless whether he's there or not, it could be koina for him because kinyan chotzer. But if it itself is not in his chotzer, then there's nothing to talk about. Tosfos discusses that a little bit. Tosfos has a different explanation. This v'hilchasa de lase b'chatzerei means lase we're using in the same sense as before. It means the baal achotzer is not in his chotzer, the malzer is not in his chotzer, and we're using the v'hilchasa to support what we said before. We explained a minute ago previously in the discussion, that there's a difference whether the baal achotzer is there in town or not. Now we're saying, as a matter of fact, you should know that is a valid explanation. That is the correct explanation of the matter. It depends whether the malva is in town or not. Yeah. Which, by the way, it's a little bit different. Usually, when the Gemara says the hilchasa, most of the time it usually means to establish what the halacha is. Here, we're using the hilchasa in the sense to say that this halacha that we were discussing before is true in the following scenario.
If his son, brother, and him is in contact, what's the...
His son is not his... As long as he's alive, his son is not 这三个没有人念，三个干嘛了？好，这些。Now, so now we're done for the time being with the dinim of Keren. We went through all the details of Keren. Now we're going to start on the next one of the other nizikim, which is Bor. We saw it at the beginning of the Masechta, Asher v'Habor Hamava v'Hever. Now we're going to start it on Bor. The Pnei Yeshua actually points out that what it is we're going to have Bor, then we're going to talk about Shein and Regel in the next Perek, and then we're going to get to Fire at the end of the next Perek, because that's different than the order at the beginning of the Masechta. The Pnei Yeshua says going according to the order in which the Pesukim discuss. The Pesukim first discuss Keren. After that, the next thing it talks about is Bor, at the end of Perek Chafalot and Mishpatim. Then afterwards, in Perek Chafay, it deals with Shein and Regel and Fire.
Following the order.
So we're following that order, the Pnei Yeshua says. Mishnah says, "Hachoyfa bor b'shus yachad u'pischei l'shus rabim." If a person digs a pit in Rishus Yachad in his own property, but the opening of it is in Rishus Rabim, now Rashi points out, obviously it would be all the more so if he dug the whole pit in Rishus Rabim. But the chiddush is, even if the body of the pit is in his Rishus, but the opening of it is in Rishus Rabim, that's enough to be mechayev already, because an animal walking by in Rishus Rabim can fall into it.
This is only
Drabana? No, Daraisa we're talking about. Daraisa, the pasuk. Okay.
How do we know that?
Okay, hold on. Let's start with the pasuk. We're going to be quoting bits and pieces of the pasuk throughout the whole thing, and in general we need to know what the pasuk says. The pasuk phrases it like this. V'chiyiftach ishbor, a person opens up a pit, meaning there was a pit already dug, and he opens it by removing the cover. Oy kiyichre ishbor, or the person digs a pit. Soon we'll talk about why the pasuk needs to mention both. V'loy chasenu, and he doesn't cover it. V'nafal shama sherda chamur, and a sherda chamur falls into the pit. Bala bor yishalem, the owner of the bor has to pay. Kesef yashab levalav, he has to give money to the owner. V'hamethi yaloy, and the dead carcass is in. Those are the pesukim that talk about bor.
Okay.
So now, the point is that it can't be that the whole bor, including the opening of it, is in his rishus, because then what are you doing in my rishus? It has to necessarily be that the opening of it, at least, is in rishus and abit. Otherwise, what are you hired for? So that's what we're saying.
If the bor is in his rishus?
If the whole bor, including its opening, is in his rishus, then he's not hired for anything. What are you doing coming into my rishus? Well, what's your show doing in my rishus? Same as anything else that we said before. So it has to be. So the entrance, so the opening to the bor is in Rishus Rabim. That's enough to be mechayivim. Or the Rishus Rabim or Pischa the Rishus Yachid, or the other way around. What if the body of the bor is under Rishus Rabim and the opening of it is into Rishus Yachid? However, in order for that to happen, in order to be chayiv for that, it would have to be that you maskir the area around the bor. Because otherwise, again, you have the same issue. What are you doing coming into my... Now, Rashi also points out, I mean, obviously, we're not talking about if the main part of the bur is in Rishus Rabim, and the opening is in Rishus Yachid, you dug at an angle, let's say, and you have, if the roof of the bur that's in Rishus Rabim collapses, that's a whole different matter. We're not even getting into that. We're talking about that if the opening is in Rishus Yachid, but you will mask that area and allow B'nai Rishus Rabim to come in there, then also you're going to be chayav. Or Rishus Yachid or Pischa Rishus Yachid Acher, or if you dug the bur in one Rishus Yachid and the opening is in another Rishus Yachid, or actually it doesn't even have to be necessarily another Rishus Yachid. In all those cases, Chayev, again, it would have to be that, again, if we're talking Pischa Rishus Yachid, it would have to be that you master that end of it. Again,
such that one Rishus Yachid to another.
Tosfos brings in another possibility, which is that it can be you dug it in your Rishus Yachid, you extended it all the way so that the mouth of it is in somebody else's Rishus Yachid, and then that person, sure, falls into, or somebody else's, sure, falls into it, let's say. So then you're liable, well, that's the Rishus explains in Tosfos. Tosfos asks the question, why isn't the Bala Chotzer himself liable to fill in the pit? Where the opening of it is in his chaser. In fact, we learned a case the other day. We had a case the other day where Shur dug a hole in somebody's chaser. We say the owner of the Shur is responsible for the damage to the chaser, but the owner of the chaser is responsible to fill in the hole. Why don't we say a similar thing over here? And there's a number of explanations that Achronim give to answer Tosfos' question. Among them, we could be talking about a case where the person who dug it didn't yet pay for the damage to the chaser. Until he doesn't, until he pays for it, he's still on the hook for any of the damages. Once he pays for it, then the other person becomes liable. And there's various other answers also.
Why? Okay.
Okay, Martha, turn it up on. If somebody digs a pit in Rishas Yachid and the entrance to it is in Rishas Rabim, Rabbi Shmuel says, this is the bor that the Torah is talking about. Now, what do we mean by that? What is he coming to exclude by that? That will deal with in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva, no. If a person was maskir his reshus, but not his bor, so in other words, a person dug a bor in his own reshus, let's say, and he would maskir the area around it and allowed Nei Rishus Rabin to walk around it, but he still retains ownership of the bor. That is the case of the bor that the Torah is talking about. There is, by the way, an interesting thing earlier in the Masechta.
In the
area around the bor, you declared hefker, you declared it available for Bnei Rishus Rabin to walk in. There was an interesting machlokas before earlier in the Masechta between Rashi and Tosfos. What happens if you dug the bor in your property? You will master the area around the bor and you will master the bor. Are you still chayav or not? Rashi learned over there that in that case you're not chayav. As long as you don't retain ownership of the bor anymore and until you dug it in your own reshus, then even you will master the area around it plus the bor itself, you'd be potter. Whereas Tosfos learned that he's chayav in that case.
Because
the fact is that it's still available to Bnei Rishus Rabin to walk around. You being master your bur after you made the area available to Bnei Rishus Rabin to walk, then yeah.
Unless you tell them.
If you tell them, we'll get to later. If you dig a bur for the purpose of the Rabin and hand it over to them, we'll deal with that later in the Gemara. If the bur is dug in Rishus Rabin, everybody agrees you chayev regardless, whether you own the bur or not. My time, because the pasuk says the pasuk says if a person opens up a bur or if he digs the bur, and you have to ask, why does it have to mention both? If you chayev even just for reopening a bur where you didn't dig the bur to begin with, you only uncovered it, and you chayev akriya lekol shekein. How much more so you should be chayev if you dug a new bur where there never was one before? Psicha is. Chafira, it's two different words, essentially. No, what the Torah is teaching us is that even if you don't have any ownership of the bor whatsoever, all you did was uncover it, or all you did is dug it, so it's in your Shoset Abim, the area doesn't belong to you, nor does the bor belong to you, you're still chayim. So therefore, if you dug it in Shoset Abim, there's no question that you're chayim, regardless whether you're master the bor or not. The machlokas is only if you dug the bur in your own reshus. So, Rabbi Akiva saw the bur reshus in Nami Chayev. Rabbi Akiva holds that even if you dug the bur in your own reshus and then you were master your reshus, you're still Chayev. To the reshus of Abim, yeah, you made an easement, in other words. Nevertheless, Nami Chayev, you're still Chayev. Just the Bala bur, because the pasuk speaks of the owner of the bur, implying the bur de Isbet Bailim Kamalachmana, implying that the Torah is talking about a bur that actually has an owner. You made the area around it hefker. You didn't make, that's the point. Rabbi Akiva is saying you didn't make the bur itself hefker. That's if you made the area around the hefker and you made the bur hefker, that was the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos that I just mentioned. But if you still retain ownership of the bur, but you were master the area around it, and Bnei Rishus Rabin are now allowed to walk there, that is what Rabbi Akiva is saying. That's what the pasuk is talking about. That's when you're chayim. Because then you have both. You have that the Bnei Rishus Rabin have the ability to get there, and therefore for somebody's shirt to come over to fall in there. On the other hand, there is Baal HaBur. You have ownership of the bur. Rabbi Shmuel Sava Baal HaTakala, whereas Rabbi Shmuel says not necessarily. Baal HaBur doesn't mean necessarily that you actually have ownership of the bur. It just means the one who created the hazard in the first place. Baal HaBur means the one who is responsible for having created this bur.
So it has to, in other words, only if
it's in Rishus Rabin, Rabbi Shmuel says. If you dug it in your own Rishus, you will master the area around it. You're still potter. So that's what the Braita was saying. The Braita started saying that according to Rabbi Shmuel, only if one or the other end of the bur is in Rishus Rabim, are you going to be chayiv? And according to Rabbi Akiva, you don't even need that. Ella my zeh bur of a Torah come with Rabbi Akiva. Fine. What does Rabbi Akiva mean? This is the bur that the Torah is speaking of. After all, according to him, any kind of bor, not any kind, but whatever, both the kind that Rabbi Shmuel mentioned, where one or the other end is in Rishus Rabim, as well as the kind that he himself described, where you dug it in your Rishus and then you master your Rishus. Either way, what does he mean? Zehu, this is the one. He means Zehu bor, Shapasach Fa'er Pasach Tchilot Tashlomen. All he means is this is the kind of bor of which the Pasach is specifically mentioning when it comes to payment. Given that the Torah says Bala Bur Yishalim, then that must be the one that the Torah is referring to. But as a matter of fact, I will.
Yes, two cases.
In other words, Rabbi Akiva is saying, in other words, that it's true, Rabbi Shmuel, what you're saying is a valid case where you'd be higher for Bur. However, even if you have entirely in your Rishus, in your Mafia, your Rishus, where you, Rabbi Shmuel, are claiming that you're potter in that case, no, I'm telling you, the case that I'm describing, Hifki Rishus of La Hifki Bode, is exactly the case that the Torah is describing. So don't tell me that's a bird that you'd be potter for. That's exactly the case the Torah is describing by using the word Baal Afer and saying that you're chayav. Okay, so that's Rabbah's way of explaining the machlokes. Rabbi Yosef says differently. But bor b'rishus ha'yachid kolam le'pligu d'machayev. No, when it comes to a bor in rishus ha'yachid, everybody would agree yachayev. My time a bala bor amar achmanu b'vodeis le'bayla maskinin, because everybody would have had to agree that bala bor implies that the bor has an owner. So therefore, even both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would have to agree to that.
Because the Torah says
Bala Bur. So not like Rabba was saying that Rabbi Shmuel might understand Bala Bur to just mean the one who's responsible for creating the Bur, even though it's in Rishus Rabim. No, it has to be that there's an actual owner. She pleaded the Bur Rishus Rabim. No, rather Machlokes is, as far as a Bur Rishus Rabim, are you chayiv or not? Rabbi Shmuel saw a Bur Rishus Rabim nami chayiv. Rabbi Shmuel holds that you chayiv even if the Bur is in Rishus Rabim, meaning completely in Rishus Rabim. As we said before, because again, the pasuk mentioned if you open a bur or if you dig a bur, and again, if you're liable for opening up a bur even though you didn't dig it to begin with, how much more so? Of course, you have to be chayav for digging one machzila. What the pasuk is implying again is that you chayav because you dug or because you opened it up, even if you have no ownership over it at all. So we're explaining differently. In other words, we're saying not, before we were saying that Rabbi Shmuel would say that when the Torah says Bala Bur doesn't necessarily mean that you have any ownership, it means that you're responsible. Now we're saying Bala Bur means that if the Bur has a Baal, you definitely have no question about it. But no, even if it doesn't, if it has an owner, meaning it's in the Shasiyah, but even if it doesn't have an owner, all you did was Psicha or Kriya, you're still going to be Chayav.
So why may this make the distinction then?
What's
the purpose? Doesn't serve any purpose to make that decision.
Well, let's see. Good point. I don't know. According to Rabbi Shmuel, just we have two different. Because the point is like this: you have to say Bala Bur because we're saying even though the Bur itself is your Rishus, even though the Bur itself is your Rishus, if the area around it is not your Rishus, namely your Master, you're still going to be chayiv. You don't have the ability to say, well, I dug it. When I dug it, I was allowed to. It was in my Rishus. Okay, I was master of my resource afterwards. I created an easement afterwards. That's not my problem. No, we don't say that. But we also say that even if he dug it, Atzilin, which is an Abbey, still fine.
Okay, but what's the difference? Why make a distinction between Bala Bur as the owner or Bala Bur as a...
Because that's
someone who had the Sahara use if...
No, according to Rabbi Yossi, we're not understanding Bala Bur as meaning the one who has a chayus at all. We're strictly understanding Bala Bur as meaning the one who owns the bur. But then the point would be the Torah still has to inform us that even though the borough has an owner and the area around it once had an owner as well,
right.
You don't say, but I dug it beheter, and therefore, therefore I'm good. You're still chayev.
Right.
And all the more so if it didn't even have an owner, l'chatchila, if you dug it right there in Shesed Abim and never even belonged to you, then you're also chayev. Rabbi Akiva, whereas Rabbi Akiva argues, Hanu Mitzvah Tzrichi. Actually, Rabbi Akiva says, no, not necessarily, because it's true that the Torah seems to be redundant by saying, Ki Yiftach B'Chiyah. However, there is a Chiddush in it that, independent of this that we're saying that you chayev only for digging or uncovering a pit, there is a Chiddush in both of those things, which therefore we can't use it to say, Al Iske Psichav, Al Iske Kriya. Namely, because of Rahmana
Habit. The same Achayis.
Yeah, it is. But the point is, you would think that there's a distinction. You would think that there's a certain underlying distinction between the two possible cases, and therefore the Torah needs to spell them out between whether you opened up a pit that somebody else previously dug, which is reopening one, or kriya, which is digging a new one. Rabbi Akiva is saying, you're telling me, Rabbi Shmuel, that there's no reason for the Torah to mention both of them. It just wants to stress that as long as you have some kind of involvement with the Borei Chayev, I will tell you that's not what the Torah is telling you. The Torah needed to stress both the two cases, where you dug it, or where you uncovered it, because each of them is a chiddush. That's what we're going to say. Because if the Torah had only mentioned the case where you open it, have amin a perseach or the saga of the kisa, you would say, okay, if you open a burr that previously was dug and then covered up, then fine, it's good enough if you put a covering on it. But
what else?
Well, as opposed to koda, you would think if you dig a new pit, lo saga of the kisa, you have the toim, you would think maybe just covering it is not enough. You actually have to refill it in order to be potter. Therefore, cause
opened it, you just have to cover it.
So maybe, in other words, if the Torah had only told us ki yiftach ish bor v'lo yichasenu, you would understand it to say, if you find a pit that previously was dug and covered and you uncover it, you chayev until you recover it. But if you dig a new pit, then you still chayev, even if you cover it, unless you actually fill it up.
But you wouldn't. They say if you uncover it, you need to fill it up.
There'd be no law. Because we're saying if the Torah only said ki yiftach and then v'lo yichasenu, that you didn't cover it, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The ikaz rachmana ki yichre, and conversely, if the Torah only told us the case where you dug a new burr, have amin a kriya hu deboy kisi, you would say on the contrary, when you dug a pit, you're responsible to cover it mishum da avid maisa, because after all, you did something. There wasn't a pit there before, and there is one now. Al fasei after the avid maisa, when you're just opening a pit that was already previously created and covered, you didn't really do anything significant.
No.
There was a pit there already.
Right.
Maybe you shouldn't need to cover it at all. Maybe you're potter, regardless. Kamash Malan, and therefore the Torah had to tell us both things.
Why would you say that you would be potter if you didn't recover it?
Because the fact is, it's not your burr to begin with. It's the burr of Rishas Rabim. Somebody else created it. Somebody else put a cover on it. Okay, you remove the cover. Who says you're liable to put back the cover? But we could think that. Therefore, the Torah had to stress
it.
Okay. Fine, but you could. But nevertheless, you could think that way, and therefore the Torah had to spell that.
Right.
So you can't learn from that. In other words, Rabbi Akiva is saying that no matter when, if you dig a burr or uncover it, you're always going to be chayev. It really depends where the burr is. Again, if the burr, according to Rabbi Yosef's way of looking at it, if the burr is in Rosh Hashanah and you mark the area, you're for sure chayev. The question is, if you dig it in Rosh Hashanah, are you chayev or are you potter? The Elamai Zel Bar Umvatar Tambim Shmuel, fine, according to this explanation, according to Rabbi Shmuel, either way, whether the Bar is in Rosh Hashanah or in Rosh Hashanah, either way, you're chayev. What does he mean when he says, Zehu Bar Umvatar, this time where one end of it is in Rosh Hashanah and the other end is in Rosh Hashanah, you're chayev? Again, he says, yeah. Again, it means Zehu Bar Shapasakai Akasa Tchilul Lizak. And again, Rabbi Shmuel would just say that means you telling me, Rabbi Akiva, that a case where it's in Rosh Hashanah, you'd be potter. No, that's the very case that the Torah is describing.
And why did he say day of
that? That's what he means. Zehu, this that you're thinking, this case that you're thinking as potter is actually the one that the Torah is describing and saying he's crying. Okay. maybe. We have a contradiction from a braisa, to the way Rabbi Yosef explained the machlokes. A braisa says a chayva bo rishus rabim a paskal rishus yachid. If a person dug a pit in rishus rabim and opened it into rishus yachid, potter, because it's in the end of it is in rishus yachid, and therefore the bnei rishus rabim have no business going over there. That afa pisha ain't a shori lachas kain. Now, even though it is true, you're not allowed to do that. Lachila lafisha ain't oisin cholol tachas rishus rabim, because you're really not allowed to dig out hollow areas under rishus rabim. Because even you put a solid cover or whatever over it, or you dig it deep underground, still eventually the it may thin out and something will fall in there. Incidentally, I mean in later times the halacha is not necessarily like that. But Ashba, for example, discusses that, Amar discusses that, not necessarily. In times and places where it's an accepted thing that you're allowed to dig under rishus rabim, then you're allowed to. It all depends what the local laws are. Yeah. The Gemara is assuming back in a time when this wasn't a common thing that therefore you're not allowed to do it. On the other hand, but the other way around, if you dig a bur shiach umayra, we'll talk about on the bay the details of what burdus shichin and myris are three kinds of holes in the ground. We'll talk about on the bay each one is a different shape. We'll get to that. So a person digs those in Rishus Yachid, or Paschal Rishus Rabim, and he opens the opening of it is in Rishus Rabim, Chayev. Then he's Chayev, because you can't have the opening of it be in Rishus Rabim. V'achov continues the price. So V'achov Boris Rishus Yachid Asmuchal Rishus Rabim. Now, a third case. Suppose somebody digs a pit in Rishus Yachid next to Rishus Rabim. Kegoin Elo Achovim Ma'ushim. For example, what people do when they're digging for a foundation for a wall. So then you dig a trench next to Rishus Rabim. Potter. So then you're potter because it's in your Rishus.
Rishus Yachid.
So you dug it in Rishus Rabim, but it's next to Rishus Rabim. Kein elav achoy from Lushin, like when you dig a hole in the ground for foundations for a wall. Potter. We're going to discuss soon. We're going to get more into this detail soon about achoy from Lushin. Wait. He said you chayev unless you make a machitza 10 tefachim high, or unless you remove it at least 4 tefachim away from where the people from where the people and the animals are walking. Let's finish the discussion and then we'll see. The basic halacha is like a tanakama, but wait, we'll talk about it. So, thus far the braisa. Now, let's figure out. Taima de la ushin. So, in that last case, why are we saying he's potter is only because he's digging for foundations? Paul lav la ushin chayev, implying that if he wasn't doing it for foundations, he would be chayev regardless. And the Rashba, by the way, says an interesting thing on this. The Rashba says that it's true, normally the din is you're not allowed to damage your shusarabim, and if you do, you're chayev. In this case, actually, the Gemara is going to talk. Well, it's right next to, and actually the Gemara is going to bring up the possibility soon that maybe even your trench extends a little bit into Shadabim. But Ashba says an interesting point, which is, normally that is true. You're not allowed to do that. You're responsible for any damages that are caused. But here, since it's built, if you dig your trench, if you were to cause a hazard in Shadabim, you'd be chayv. In this case, the Ashba says, when the Gemara is going to bring up the point soon, that maybe you dug your trench partly into Shadabim, in that case, when you're doing it through a wall, you'd be potter because it's important. People need houses to live in. That's considered an important enough purpose that we make a temporary exemption to you causing a hazard in Rishus Rabim. So we have to figure out which of the Tanoim, Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva, is this bride like? Bishleim el Rabba. So now it works out well according to Rabba. The first part of the braisa that said that if you dug the burr in your rishus, your potter, that would be according to Rabbi Shmuel. Then when the braisa continues, in the last case, that if you dug in rishus yachid next to rishus rabim, unless you're doing it for foundations, you'd be chayev, that would be according to Rabbi Akiva. So that works out nicely according to Rabba. El Rabbi Yosef, Bishleim a sefer divrei hakol, according to Rabbi Yosef's way of looking at it, that you chayev always if you dig a bor in a yachid, as long as people have as long as bnei rishus rabim have access to the edge of it, which they do in that last case, that's right next to rishus rabim. So the sefer, the case where you're digging a trench not for the purpose of building foundations, but just stand at the edge of your property, when we say you're chayev, fine. Both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would agree with that.
Rabbi Akiva would agree because
according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva both agree that if you dig the pit in Rishus HaYachid, but Bnei Rishus HaRabim have access to the edges of it, you're chayev. And in this case, they have access to the edge of it. But the first part of the Braisa, when the first part of the Braisa said that when the first part of the Braisa said that if you dig a burr in your Rishus, you potter, money, who would it be like? Lo Rabbi Shmuel, lo Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't seem to me like either Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. And obviously, we can't be talking about just that you dug it in your Rishus and you the Rishus HaYachid. When we say that potter, obviously it can't mean that it's in the middle of your property where nobody has access to. There's no reason to think you should be chayev in that case necessarily. You have to be talking about where it's close. Either it's not necessarily where it's close, where you created an easement. Were you allowed, where you were master of the area and allowed Bnei Rishus HaRabim to go there? According to Rabbi Yosef, both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would hold you chayev in that case. Why is the Braita saying potter? Amalach Rabbi Yosef, kula divrei hakol. Here Rabbi Yosef can answer you, no, actually the whole Braita, or not really the whole Braita, Chosef says, but meaning the beginning and the end of the Braita. We have three cases in the Braita. So leaving aside the middle case, the middle case is in the middle case where you dug it in Rishus HaYachid and the opening is in Rishus HaRabim, yeah, that's only according to Rabbi Shmuel, but we're not talking about that. The beginning and the end of the Braita can be according to everybody. The Reisha is talking about where you weren't master your Rishus or your Bor. So therefore, you're potter because what are you doing in my area? Okay, so then there's no Chiddush in the fact that you're potter for somebody falling in there, obviously. The Chiddush is rather that even though you did it illegally in the first place because you're not allowed to make holes under Rishus Rabim, but the fact of the matter is you did, and there's no way that anybody from Rishus HaRabim is going to fall in there because you made sure that that is deep underground, then therefore we're not going to be mechayev you on that ground.
You made it safely, in other words.
Yeah, you made it safely. So it's true you did it illegally. If you had come l'chatchila to Beis Din and asked whether you could dig such a pit, they would have told you no because you're not allowed to make a cholol under Rishus HaRabim. However, once you did it, as long as the opening of it is safely within your property and there's no easement, then you're potter. That's the point of the Braisa, according to that way of looking at it.
How do you know it's safe? I mean, maybe the...
Well, if anything were to ever fall into the Rishus HaRabim part of it, you'd be chayev, sure. But we're talking about until that happens, you're potter.
If you dig a hole under the Rishus HaRabim and the earth is soft, then it could collapse.
Eventually, if it does, you're going to be chayev. Then, yeah, for sure. That's
why now you're not chayev?
Because fact is, no, nothing's fallen in yet.
Right.
Okay. What are you supposed to be chayev? If something falls in, you're going to be chayev. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. But that's the point. In other words, we don't say you're chayev because you dug a hole under Rishus HaRabim. If the opening of it is in your Rishus, then you weren't master your Rishus or your bur, and therefore Bnei Rishus HaRabim have no access to it. Okay, actually now, if you're saying that according to Rabbi Yosef, the Braisa could really be going according to everybody, then actually you don't have to say that according to Rabba, that one part of the Braisa is like Rabbi Shmuel and the other part is like Rabbi Akiva. You could explain the same way. You could say within Rabba's explanation that the whole Braisa is according to Rabbi Shmuel. But time of the Laushin, Halav Laushin Chayev, what about you asking then why in the last case in the Braisa is it implying that if you dug a trench not for the purpose of a wall foundation, you would be Chayev, whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, you ought to be Potter, even in that case. The reason is you're going to Arvach Arvuchi L'Rishus HaRabim, because we can be talking about a case where you extended it into Rishus HaRabim. And there's actually two different, Arvach means to make it wider. There's two different girsas over here. We have the girsa that we have in Rashi, and then there's a Goyis Habak girsa, which is, there's two ways of looking at it. Does Arvach Arvuchi literally mean that he actually made the trench wider, and part of it actually extends into the area of Rishus HaRabim? Or does it mean Hagos HaBach learns, and he learns that way also in Bach and in his Pirush, the Bach Hantur, that the person taka the edge of the trench of the pit is still within his reshus, but he set aside the area from the edge of the pit onward and allowed it to be part of reshus rabbi. So it's two different ways of looking at it. Is it, in other words, that he dug the trench? Is it that we're talking that the edge of the trench is let's say a foot into reshus rabbim, or is it the edge of the trench is a foot in from his property line, but he set aside that area to be allowed and allowed the reshus rabbim to use it? Two different ways of understanding what the Gemara's answer here is.
But in both cases.
So in that case, because he wasn't doing it for a house foundation, which is an exception that will allow him, then he's going to be chayav. But otherwise not.
The otherwise would be if he dug it,
according to the two different ways of looking at it, would be either if he kept the whole trench within his property, i.e. the edge of it is next to Rosh Hashanah, not his problem. Or, according to the other way of looking at it, he made sure it's within his property line and said, I still don't allow B'nai Rosh Hashanah to walk over here. And practically speaking, they may. I'm not putting up a fence to keep them out, but I'm not giving them Rosh Hashanah. Okay, the Gemara says, Meisvi. Fine, I have a further contradiction against Rav Yosi. Another Braisa says, somebody digs a pit in Rosh Hashanah and opens into Rosh Hashanah, but if he digs it in Rosh Hashanah, which is next to Rosh Hashanah, and again, we could be talking about the two possibilities over there, whether he's allowing them to walk in that area, or whether he's doing it right next to Rosh Hashanah or not, then he's potter. So, Bishlam al-Rabba Kulur Abishmal. So, according to Rabba, this entire Braisa can be according to Abishmal. El al Yosef, Bishlam al-Resha Abishmal. The Resha, when it says that you opened it, that the actual hollow of the pit is in Rosh Hashanah, and the opening is in Rosh Hashanah, he's Chayev, that's easily according to Abishmal, because that's what he said in the original Braisa at the beginning of the Sugya. The second part, where according to Rabbi Yosef, El Sefer, Mani, according to Rabba, so both parts can be according to Rabbi Shmuel. Because according to Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that you're only chayev in a case where the bur is accessible to B'nai Rishus Rabbim, and in this case it is. So both parts go according to him. In the one case, because the opening of it is in Rosh Hashanah, and in the other case, because the opening of it is next to Rosh Hashanah. So that fits according to Rabba. El Rav Yosef, Bishlem Reisha Rabbi Shmuel, the Reisha fine goes according to Rabbi Shmuel, El Seifa, Mani Lo Rabbi Shmuel, Vele Rabbi Akiva. The Seifa doesn't seem to go according to either one of them. Because again, according to either one of them, it's in your Rishus. If we're saying that in the second case, we're saying that you're potter, why? According to Rav Yosef, the bird in your Rishus and accessible to B'nai Rishus Rabbim, you're chayav, according to everybody. So who would the second part of the Braisa be going like? Well, you dug it in your Rishus, but next to Rishus Rabbim, and you're potter. The answer is, Amalach, Rav Yosef can answer you, but for the ocean, v'divir hakol. That last Braisa can be talking about where you're digging for wall foundations. And therefore, as we said, wall foundations are an exception. That both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva agree that in the case of wall foundations, we're going to make an exception and allow you to do that.
That would be the only exception.
And even according to Rabbi Yosef, if you heard it not, because I'll not like it. Turn up on us. Chofer pasach u'masal rabim. What if somebody digs a pit or opens a pit, reopens a pit, and then he gives it over to the rabim? So Rashi explains Masa the Rabbim means that he tells the people of the city, it's for you. It's for you. Rainwater will collect in there, and you will be able to drink from it. You and your animals will be able to drink from it. The Rosh learns that actually it's not necessarily what it actually has to be, is he has to give them the actual pail or the actual cover or whatever, the actual equipment that's used
not
with the bird, not just tell them. So potter. So then he's potter from anything that happens there. Chofer potter for leimotz the rabbim, but if he digs it or opens it up and does not give it over to the rabbim, chayev. As a matter of fact, this was the minhag of Nechunya, who used to dig Boris Shichen and Myris, the various kinds of water cisterns. He used to do that. He would dig these pits and whatnot. He would open them up, and then he'd give them to the rabbin, either make an announcement or give them the equipment, as the case may be. Actually, it's interesting. Now, the Mishnah in Shkolim mentions Nechunya Chofer Shichin as one of the officials of the Bais Mikdash. That his official job, he was employed by the Bais Mikdash, that his job was to dig pits like that in order that the early regal should have water to drink. Here, from our Gemara, it sounds like he was doing it on his own initiative. So they talk about different, the Shash talks about a couple of different possibilities. It may have been two different people, or it may be that there were some of them that he did as a salaried official of the Bais Mikdash, and others that he did on his own initiative, whatever. Anyway,
where did he dig exactly? We know
wherever, but around Yerushalayim, on the roads in and around Yerushalayim. But that's the point. In Yerushalayim, Rabbim, or right next to Yerushalayim, Rabbim, but he was doing it for the sake of the Rabbim. When the Chachamim heard of what he was doing, Amru, that he's doing this, that he's digging these pits and then giving them over to the Rabbim, Amru, they said, Piyim Zeh Halacha Du, this person fulfilled this Halacha. What do you mean, halacha zu or tulai? What is it? Is that the only halacha he fulfilled? Ela ema at halacha. Do you know what they meant? Is he fulfilled even this halacha?
In addition to
all the other mitzvahs that he did, as Gemara was going to say too. He was a baal maisim. He had the tremendous chus of supplying the early regal with water. But he even was mekayim this particular halacha, this particular detail of the halacha, that after he dug his pits, he'd make sure to be most of them, make sure to be most of the rabbi.
So they should know, yeah.
So in this connection, since we're talking about this Nechunya Chofer Shichin, turn it up on him. We learned in a Braisa. We've learned the story actually twice before. We learned it in Shkolim. The Yerushalmi brought it in Shkolim in connection with that list of the officials of the Bais Mikdash. Again, one of them was Nechunya Chofer Shichin. And we also had it in Yevamos in connection with, we had the whole sugya over there about if a person is missing in a body of water, how long can you expect that the person may still be alive? Which is Negea as far as can his wife, if he's a man, can his wife be a married man, can his wife be married? Here we're bringing it in because we mentioned the Chonu Chayfer Shichin. So, Tananachan, Maitin Bitishon Chonu Chayfer Shichin, Shinafel Abur Godel. His daughter fell into a big pit. And it seems from what Tosfos says that it was actually one of the pits that her father had dug. So, Bova Ideas of Chonu. No, wait. Bova Ideas of Chonu Mendoza, they came and informed her Chonu Mendoza, they should have it for her. So the first hour, he told them, it's okay, she's still all right. The second hour, he also said, still shalom, it's still peaceful, she's still okay. The third hour, he told them, she got out safely. Afterwards, Amrullah mi helfa, so they asked her afterwards, who got you out of there? A male sheep, a ram, appeared to me. The zaken echad manhige with an old man leading it. Most of the Mekorishim Rashi explains over here that the ram is the ram that was brought of the turban instead of you. So the old man is Avraham Avinu. What the connection is, why if it was Avraham Avinu, there's a vast number of explanations among the Mefarshim. One of them is that Nechunya was followed in the ways of Avraham and doing chesed for the people and supplying them with water. So therefore his daughter was saved by Avraham Avinu. There's also the idea Avraham was that when the Jewish people are early the regal, they're particularly associated with Avraham Avinu, so therefore he was doing it for the sake of the early regal, and therefore that source protected him. Pnei Yeshua, by the way, says an interesting thing based on this and on the continuation of the Gemara. The verse is, he says, there really was a Xer that she was supposed to drown there, but because of the schus of Mechunya, as the Gemara is going to say, and because of the Chananim and Dosa's tefillah, the Eibishter allowed, so to speak, just like with Yitzchak, just like by the Akedah, where Yitzchak was supposed to be brought to the Korban, and instead the Eibishter substituted a ram, so also now she was supposed to die in there, and instead the Eibishter substituted something else.
But here, people daven. By Yitzchak, nobody daven.
You don't think Avraham Avinu davened? What do we say in davening? Mishal Nes Avraham Bahara Maria. Yeah.
He davened for what?
He davened maybe that Yitzchak should. Whatever it is, the point is still, the Pnei Yeshua says, by the way, this is a source for the concept of kaparis. We have sometimes there's a tact of zed on a person that he deserves to not live out the next year. So instead, so to speak, some kind of substitute is needed. So therefore, the chicken is done as a substitute for that.
the turkey for the presidential turkey party.
Okay. I'm real low, so now they have to come in and dose a Navi. Asked her, what are you, a Navi? Like, you knew all this time that she was safe and she got out. I'm like, Navi, I know she was like, then Navi, I know she's not a Navi, I'm not the son of a Navi. I said like this. This thing that this tzaddik, Nechunya, went to so much trouble of, that to dig these pits for the Ole Rego, especially if we learn, like Tosfos is saying that it was one of the actual pits that he dug, Yikosha Bezaro. Should one of his children end up stumbling and end up getting killed by it?
Possibly, I mean.
Well, wait. Amar Amasa, Afapi can mess the neighbor's summer. Even so, later on, one of Nechunya's son died from thirst. Shanema, it says in the Pasuk, Sviv of Nisar Amoid, it says that in the Pasuk and Tilim, that around the Eivishter, the symbol meaning of Nisar is the Moshin Sa'ara, storm, that around the Eivishter is very stormy. But Malamet, we damage from Malamet, Shakarish Rokh, Medakhtik, and Sadik, in Sviv of Afilok Bechota Saira. It teaches us that the Eivishter is particular with those who are around him, meaning Sadikim, who are close to him, even to a hair's breadth. In other words, there was Epis, some kind of gak or some kind of thing that Nechunya had not done quite right, which therefore the Eivishter judged him very, very, very swiftly, very, very, very severely. So Tosfos asked the question, if Reb Chanina ben Dosa was so certain that the daughter was not going to die in the pit over there, how comes it happened that the son died of thirst? So Tosfos answers the difference is that the actual pit that he dug versus not. Other Mephoshim talk about different other possibilities, including that Nechunya dug the pit, but how did they get filled with water? That came from rain. He wasn't directly involved with the water. Therefore, that his son died of thirst is not necessarily, you can't necessarily say that that's Dovish and Sarabar, that something that he took all that trouble for, but the digging of the pit, and that she should fall, that he actually did. They talk about different other possibilities, including that maybe at some point, maybe Taki slacked off on the digging at some point. And again, if he'd been a regular person, okay, you know, he worked hard all this time, but because he's a tzaddik, the Eivishter didn't give him a break.
Well, the Eivishter doesn't give a break.
That's what we're saying. That's a tzaddik and the Eivishter is medaktik more. Rav Nechunya Omer Mahachar, Rav Nechunya says you can learn the same idea from another pasuk. Kel Naras Besod Kedoshim Naba, the Eivishter who is exalted in the group in the secret group of the great holy secret group of the holy ones. Venoda Al Kosiva, and he's awesome and he's feared by all those around him. Again, you see that those who are around the Eivishter, the tzaddikim who are close to the Eivishter, are have to be in extra fear of him. Interesting thing that's brought in Sfardim is the vote is most people the Eivishter judges with Rach, Tzaddikim the Eivishter judges with Din. With Din, and Din is Medaktik Kotasaira, yeah.
Why is that?
For one thing, because it says when the Eivishter first created the world, he intended to create it with Midas Adin, but he saw that the world couldn't last that way, so he joined to Midas Chesed. Tzaddikim are on a level where they're able to live on a level of the original way the Eivishter intended to create the world.
He didn't know that he created the world.
No, Chesedus talks about the idea that it means that the Eivishter by having that thought to begin with created that potential in the world. There is a potential for the world to be run according to Din, and therefore so they can actualize that potential. In Chassidur, there's a minor in Chassidur that talks about an interesting thing, actually, that all world was created with Chesed, Olam Haba was created with Gvura. So therefore, Olam Haba was created with Gvura, yeah. The Alphabet ever discusses it at some length in one of the Maimorim in the Chassidur, yeah. So when we say the Eivishter intended to create it with Midas Adin, it means the Eivishter put that potential into the world, that it's capable of running according to Din. In our world, we can't conceive of the thing, but the yeah. Okay. Yeah. Amar Rav Chanina, in this connection, Kola Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatran Hu, anybody who says that the Eivishter is willing to overlook things, like a person, the Eivishter is, so to speak, willing to overlook a person's averus, Yivatru Chayev, his life deserves to be made hefker. Because, Rashi says, then it convinces people you can do Averis and you'll get away with it. Shanema, the Pasuk says, Sur Tom Impala, the Eivishter, the rock, whose ways are perfect, he calls it off of Mishpat. All the Eivishter's ways are justice. Meaning, it's not that the Eivishter overlooks it, like I'm willing to, like I'm not going to bother. Davish has right. Rachmanis. He'll have Rachmanis. I'll have patience, as Gemara is going to say now, but he still keeps it on file, so to speak.
At the end of the day.
At the end of the day, yeah. And there was an interesting thing, actually. Levi Yitzchok Berdichiker has a part on this in the Sefer Kedushas Levi. He says it actually depends. If a person takes the view that if a person sort of feels as if the Eibishter doesn't have the power to punish then the point is if a person doesn't live with that mitzvah, if the Eibishter has that power, then yes, it's wrong to him to say for him to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatzlan. But if he lives with that the Eibishter has the capability of the full capability to reward and punish anytime he wants, then a person does have the ability to say say HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatzlan without incurring what the Gemara says. A person doesn't live with that thing on a day-to-day basis. Okay. Oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, when we said about this, that this girl was in the pur of 1, 2, 3 hours, there's a big discussion among the Achronim. Does this have implications as far as when we learn to Yavamas, when we learn this in connection with when a person is in water, how long can they survive? Does it have implications how long we can say we have to wait until we know that a person is dead? On the one hand, well, first of all, but on the other hand, I mean, can a person really survive in the water for 2 or 3 hours? So they talk about, that first of all, maybe shorts of a year doesn't actually mean hours, maybe it just means periods of time, so shorter than an hour. Second of all, maybe there's a distinction between in a pit, in a burr, after all, you can grab a hold of the side, you can keep yourself above water a bit, as opposed to if you're in a lake or something, where there's nothing to grab onto, that might be dead. Yeah. What does it mean? It says in the pasuk Erech Apayim. It says in the pasuk the Eibishter is long. Literally, Erech Apayim means long of Apayim. He has a long Apayim. Now Apayim, well, Erech. In other words, it means that he's patient. But Apayim is a double expression. Otherwise, it should say Erech Ah. Ah means anger. So Apayim means, so to speak, a double anger. But like Erech Ah. It means Erech Apayim with Tzaddikim and Rishayim. It means the Eibishter is patient with the Tzaddikim and with the Rishayim. With the Tzaddikim, the Eibishter is patient in that he ought to give them reward right away in Olam Hazeh, but he's patient and waits till Olam Hazeh to give them the full reward. And for the Rishayim, that the Eibishter is patient and doesn't punish them immediately in this world. Yes, that's the point. And Tosfos says that actually even within the Rishayim itself, there can be, the Eibishter's patience can be for their good or not. If the person ends up doing tshuva, then if the person ends up doing tshuva, then it's good that Eibishter was patient with him and didn't right away offer him in this world. He had a chance to do tshuva. If he never ends up doing tshuva and he gets what's coming to him in Gan Eden, then it turns out that Eibishter's patience was not so good for him. Turn it up on him. A person is not allowed to, when a person is clearing his field of stones, he's not allowed to throw them from his property into Rosh Hashanah, because that would be creating a hazard in Rosh Hashanah. You know, I'll do that. As a matter of fact, it once happened that a person was doing that. And a certain chassid saw him. Later on in the text of the Gemara, that a certain chassid might be Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseder or Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Anyway, Omalai, he says to him, Reka, an empty person. We mentioned briefly before. I don't think we had the actual story. He says to him, Reka, you empty person. Why are you throwing stones from a place that does not belong to you into a place that does belong to you? What does he mean, a place that doesn't belong to you? Rashi says it's not necessarily going to remain yours forever. What if you sell it? The field. Where's Rosh Hashanah? Everybody has it. Well, Ligla, he threw the stones from his own field into Rosh Hashanah. So the chassid is telling him, you're throwing it from a place that's not yours into a place that's yours. Ligla, so the person laughs at him. Well, I don't understand. What do you mean? I'm throwing it from a place. But the field is mine, and Rosh Hashanah is not mine. Eventually it happened, he had to sell his field. He was walking along that same Rosh Hashanah, and he tripped over those very same stones. Omar, he said, now I understand well what that chassid said, right? Not necessarily Ruach HaKodesh. Actually, says, practically speaking, you may end up having to sell it. Shema, it doesn't have to require Ruach HaKodesh, but you may end up selling it. Yeah. But in this case, it actually happens, that you're taking the stones from a place that's not yours to a place that's yours, meaning the field is not necessarily destined to remain his, so you could sell it. Rosh Hashanah is always his, because everybody uses Rosh Hashanah. Ben Yehoyada actually is an interesting Musadik report. Ben Yehoyada has an interesting Musadik report on this. He says that also, besides the simple meaning of the story, he says it can also be referring to a person who is doing Averis, that not only he himself is doing the Averis, but he's also convincing other people to do them. So the Chassid is telling him, it's bad enough you're doing the Averis yourself, but why are you also putting it into some place where it's going to end up affecting you also, because you've affected the rabbim, and then therefore eventually he realizes the fact of the case. I myself may have been able to do tshuva, but how do I now undo what I convinced everybody else to do wrong next?
Yeah.